So a lot of the deployments that we see involving free software by big tech is something in which the freedom benefits the service provider, whereas the remote user who's being used, so to speak, by the corporations is actually being exploited through the free software.
Welcome, Fetty friends, to episode 71 of Fireside Fetty. I'm your host, Ozone. Fireside Fetty is a show about folks within the Fediverse. If you're hearing, seeing, feeling, sensing this, itching, you are part of the Fediverse. Don't forget to like, subscribe, all of that stuff. Not because we have an algorithm to feed, but because that's how we naturally grow in the Fediverse. My guest today, and I guess I should have asked, I meant to ask you this. I'm going to butcher it. And I think we talked before and I asked, and we talked like a month ago.
Alex.
Just Oliva. Alex? You're sure just Alex?
Yeah, that works.
How do you pronounce the full first name though?
Alexandre? It's Alexandre. Alexandre. That's the way we pronounce it in Portuguese. But in English, I just gave up. It's Alex, and I'm fine with that. I'm happy.
You did tell me this. We had the same conversation. Alexandre Oliva.
Alexandre, right. Wow, Alex. It's good.
Thank you. I try. That's the best I can do, right? Is at least try. Alex is a free software developer, supporter, advocate, and has been a member of, I think, numerous open source boards, right? Free Software Foundation in Latin America, Free Software Foundation in general, as well as many other things. And once again, as is on this show, I am humbled and honored once I get to find I love your mug. I'm just saying what's on your mind. Once I started finding out about folks and akin to Alex, amazing people. You've done amazing stuff. I use your stuff literally every day. I mean, I'm using your stuff right now, technically, right? Like,
cool.
Before we get into all that, Alex, did you get to where you're at today?
Well, thanks for the invitation. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah.
Very excited to be here. I'm amazed that you're using things that I do, because I don't usually think of, well, I work on the compiler, so most of the time, it's not like we are using a compiler right now, but I guess it may have been compiled by the tools that I work on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know that you're using Linux Libre, but something close enough, probably.
I mean, I'm running Nobara personally, but you can imagine vast amounts of things. So you have worked on the GNU C compiler, which
The compiler collection, the old GNU compiler collection these days.
But a lot of software is compiled and created that way. And we, modern society, takes that for granted. And we're standing on the shoulders of giants like yourself. And before we go on, my chat did correct me. There is a difference. Not open source boards. Free software. Free
Thank
software.
You. Yeah.
Yes, there is a difference. And
there is a very important difference indeed.
Yes.
Not when it comes to the software proper, but in the way we approach software.
Yes.
This is becoming sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off,
but No.
I'm kind of in the middle of something here that has to do with a way to deploy free software that denies users the freedom that they deserve, that we call that SaaS, that's service as a software substitute. When someone else controls the software that you're using to do your computing, that's all as bad as running on free software. you don't have control. Someone else does.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's free software doesn't really help you much.
Yep. No, I think Cory Doctorow, when I talked to him, he made an excellent point of, you know, it's all open source software now. Google puts their stuff out there and it's open source software. That doesn't mean you get to use it. It is not free for you to use. And there is a distinction.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. That's why when in the free software movement, we always think about the user having control of their computing. The user has to have the freedoms. Otherwise, the user is no better off. And I've been realizing that this is a distinction that is very important, because I don't see that the people in who think in open source terms think of that a lot. They seem to be happy to use third-party services that in the end deny their freedom.
Yeah.
But they are happy just because it is open source. It's not free software for the user. And that's the problem that we strive to work on and to improve.
So how did you even get involved in the free software movement, let alone to, you know, where we're at already? Were you always interested in computers and software as a kid?
I started playing with computers when I was 7. And back then the computer didn't come loaded with programs. We had to type them in. So, I love that. I mean, nowadays it may seem like it sucked, but I remember having many interesting nights typing programs into computers and then seeing them run, and that was so exciting.
And then you turn it off and it's gone. All that hard work.
It's gone. Yeah, exactly. Right. Sometimes you could save it to a cassette tape, and sometimes you could even read it back. But wow. it was very different. So I came to study at the university in 1991, and I first met a Unix system there, and that was exactly when. During the transition from CentOS that had a compiler to Solaris that didn't have a bundled compiler. Professors would ask me to install programs, and we had to figure out how to get a compiler running on the new workstations and servers and stuff. And it turned out that they usually asked me to install GNU software. And so I became acquainted with GNU. I read the manifesto. I read the licenses. I felt compelled in a way. That's contradictory. It was a moral calling. Yeah. It's better this way. To participate in that, because we were getting so much great software. I felt that I had to reciprocate somehow, but at the same time, I felt I could never reciprocate as much as I was getting. So I had to try, right? I had to do my best. So I started contributing to some of the packages, and I got involved in the compiler because I used it all the time. I ran into bugs. I eventually tried to start fixing them and stuff. I wasn't very successful at first, but eventually I got the gist of it.
But and that's the thing, like being around in a community long enough, it's tenacity. You end up seeing the same issues over and over again. You start to learn the paths of that code. And by doing therein, you become an expert eventually, right?
Yeah, I guess that's how it works. It's accumulated experience and learning and being interested and getting to see things fail and look into how to fix them. That's the way to grow, I think.
Yes. Yes. Never lose that sense of curiosity. Right.
Yeah.
And it's
exactly.
We laugh about it now, where it sounds so quaint and antiquated, like an operating system not coming with a compiler. So for those that don't know what a compiler is, because this is going to be a very technical issue.
Oh, right. Indeed.
If people listen, they don't have a clue. So a compiler is any kind of... You have to be careful, because I know I'm talking to really technical people. There's no way I'm going to say this right. So everyone, please put the picture.
You wanted me to give it a shot? I've done it that a number of times. So I've sort of...
Okay. If you want to, go ahead.
The compiler is a program that... So when we write a computer program, we use programming languages that are not like natural languages. They're designed to enable us to express things very precisely for the computer to do. But it turns out the computer does not understand these languages. So we need a translator to take the way that we understand programs to express them into something that a computer understands. And that translator is what we call a compiler.
Yep. So there you go. Yeah, it's basically what takes somewhat close to English or whatever language. C is the one that I know. I'm assuming GCC, which is what you work on, right, is written in C?
It's C++. It's been C++ for a long time now.
Okay. And yeah, then and you work on the tooling that allows us to basically change our language into ones and zeros, so the computer knows, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you are a linguist.
Well, I've long loved learning languages, and not only computer programming languages. So yeah, I guess I am a linguist. No, I mean, I don't study languages in the way the linguists do. Not natural languages anyway, but I've dissected some programming languages that are interesting.
And so how long have you been doing this? Because you're talking about Solaris, early days of Solaris when CentOS didn't come with the compiler. So you're talking 90s, right?
Yeah, early 90s.
Early 90s.
I remember getting involved with GCC around 1993, probably. It was a closed development community back then. That's crazy times. So I started responding to bug reports in the mailing list, in one of the mailing lists / news groups that we had at the time, and I got an invitation to join the community that got weekly development snapshots to test, and that was, well, eventually my involvement grew into a professional situation, and well, that was in 2000. In 2000, I started being paid for work on GCC.
That's wow. And then from there, though, you got a part of the Free Software Foundation Latin America.
Yeah, that was 2004-05 when we started talking about starting the sister organization in the network of Free Software Foundations. And again, there was this moral calling that I had in me, and when I saw the announcement that some people were looking to start that organization, I had to join. I mean, I had to offer my cooperation, and it was accepted, fortunately. So I ended up being one of the founders of the FSF Latin America.
Wow. Okay. See, I saw in your on the docs and the research that I've done, that you've been with it since, yeah, I think it's in 2005. I didn't realize you were a founding member as well.
Yeah, we had the foundational assembly in 2005. We met in Argentina. We wrote collaboratively the foundational documents and things like that. It was an interesting time.
And it was about to get a lot more interesting because it led up to today, which is still an interesting time, right? How, like, what does that look like though? You're just together and you're just like, yeah, there's a free software foundation. Let's get a couple of guys and we'll do the LATAM version. Like, or is there more structure to it, or how? Like, we look at these things as pillars, especially in the free and open source community of these bastions of ideals and morals as you pass down. And we could disagree on them, but like, how do you build an entire foundation, sister foundation?
So, yeah, in the end, we didn't go for an actual foundation because that turned out to be risky and difficult because of regulations in various Latin American countries.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't want to be tied to any specific country. We didn't want to, I was based in Brazil. There are people in Argentina, there are people in Uruguay. And later on, we got people in Mexico and Chile and Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, Venezuela, Colombia.
Wow.
Gee, I hope I didn't miss anyone. So we didn't want to be tied to any particular country. Yeah. And we didn't need the formality of having an official organization. So we figured, hey, if there's no head to cut, well, maybe we'll be stronger. And this has worked sort of for us. It's a formal group of people who work as an organization for the same goals that the original FSF does and the other FSFs in the world. I hope people don't get confused when I say FSF because Fireside Fetty shares those initials.
Yeah. We're a lowercase s, though. That's one of my, after I came up with the name and like bought the domain and all this stuff, people were like, you realize it's FSF? Like, ah, oh, shoot. Oh, well.
Oh, there is not on purpose.
It was not on purpose. The other option was like FF, and I'm like, well, that's Firefox. That one I thought of, but I didn't think of the Free Software Foundation. Yeah, there's capital F, little s, capital F. That's me. And then there's FSF, all uppercase. That's you and the other members of the foundation. But you make an excellent point because a foundation is literally just, depending on your country, it is like a notarized business, right? It's just an official business. It's just a classification. And being from so many different countries, you fall under that country's laws. In this case, you are a loose grouping of folks that all have the same ideals.
Yep. Yeah, exactly, and I think that works for some things that we have set out to do. We've mostly been doing campaigning and activism and some free software development, which doesn't really have any borders. Now we got some donations here and there. Large events in Brazil back in the early days, free software events, and we raised some money there. But so we wanted to start a foundation there. But the what I got told by some people who knew about this stuff is that if you start a foundation for a purpose and the curator of foundations finds that there is another organization that is close enough, they'll just take the money and direct that to the other organization, which didn't sound right. That's in Brazil, okay? That's I don't know that this is how things work in other countries.
Yeah.
But that got me very concerned about, because we could end up with the money that we raised to promote the ideas of free software redirected to open source or something like that. Oh, no, I don't want that. But, I mean, when it comes to the software, to the software itself, we're close enough. We can collaborate. We can do things together. But when it comes to the end goals, we're very different. So, I mean, I was worried that the curator could be confused and get us in a bad situation. So,
okay,
we didn't go that way.
Interesting.
And then being a sister organization as part of a network, there was never any particular need to be a formal organization. I mean, we can participate in events, we can speak, we can publish things, we can develop software. We don't need a legal personality to do that. So it was never a problem.
Okay. Interesting. So then it comes about in 2005, which the internet, I mean, the internet was like the modern day internet was in its teens by then. And that had to massively help expand and allow you to collaborate and cooperate together, allowing something like this to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we used mailing lists, right? So that's very solid technology of the day.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Google and Microsoft broke email, but they worked very well for us. I'm bringing to mind here, it brought to mind here that in 2007, since 2000 in Brazil already had to file taxes over the internet using programs supplied by the government. And the program was not free software.
Yeah.
In 2007, we had an opportunity to fix that. So they accidentally published the program without obfuscation and with debugging, so we could decompile that. And ever since, we have been able to maintain a free version of the program for anyone to use. Now, here's the thing. The program used a lot of free software. Including libraries that were under the LGPL, a license that doesn't require the entire program to be free software, but that requires at least the library itself to remain free software for all its users.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't careful in labeling what it was that the LGPL applied to. So there is just this copy of the LGPL at the top of the distribution.
Everything is.
So, well, it's since there wasn't another governing license over the program, and Brazilian law requires users to have a license to be able to run a program, this is unlike any other country that I know about. Included that this must be the license that applies to the program. So it was okay to decompile that and take the source code under the LGPL and modify that and release that still under the LGPL. So that's how Brazil got a free software program to file tax returns.
I was about to say, like, did you face any kind of legal blowback or legal ramifications for that?
No, none whatsoever. Indeed, the government agency. So since then, we've been trying to get the agency to release the program as free software itself. Now there are even laws that mandate that, but they just ignore them. Now the thing is, through access to information laws, we requested the source code, and they said, no, we can't publish that. That would risk security of the tax data. And
of course.
So, but look, we have already published that. We have reverse engineered that and published that. There is no concern here. We know there isn't anything. Oh no, but that's not the program that we published. You know, there's total denial. And they really didn't want to comply with transparency. let alone software freedom.
Yeah,
that's very unfortunate. But we keep making pressure. We keep maintaining the possibility for people to do their taxes in freedom. So it's not a solved problem, but it's somewhat solved. Well, it's frustrating because I have better things to do to maintain that program, right? Knowing that they're doing that with my money and they won't release the software just because it's frustrating, but got to do what I got to do, right?
Yeah. You keep fighting that fight though. Someone in the chat, Bad Net Mask, asked an interesting question. Is the lack of a formal organization a blocker for getting corporate sponsorship, either private or public?
It certainly is. If we were a foundation in the traditional sense, we'd probably have infrastructure that we would have to fund and that would involve expenses, would have to raise money for that and things like that. But it's like having children. You acquire responsibilities that require you to do things that when you don't have those responsibilities, you can't afford to do. So we never felt pressure to raise funds. We have mostly done the things that we wanted to do without needing the funds. And when people feel inclined to make a donation, we ask them, please donate to the Free Software Foundation, the original one. They can use that money. We can't. We didn't know what we would do with the money. We keep our site running without a lot of expense. We publish the things. We rely on volunteer work by all the collaborators. And so there's really not a lot that we could do with more money. FSF Latin America, the FSF, absolutely, they can use your donations. They would be very useful to the cause.
And me.
It's a different approach.
The lowercase FSF too. So you hit on some really amazing points here, though, is that yes, you are blocked from sponsorships, but also you don't really want their sponsorships anyway. It allows you to have the freedom to do what you want and go where you want and change it. It's not a job. And the other thing that I think is even more important than that, though, is that you said something that we've either lost or people take for granted or don't really agree with. I don't know, where when you start taking money for something, you kind of become responsible to your customers for it. At least that's how I've always felt. You know, donations are, I am paying you for the work that I have done, not for the work that I'm going, that for the work that you're going to do. But if you look at standard software now, like, again, Android, open source, right? It's not free in the sense that, it's getting worse. But Google is the kind that, like, they don't feel any responsibility to you. The responsibility is to the shareholders to squeeze as much money out of you as possible. And even though Microsoft, you're paying for Windows, right? Which obviously is not.
Oh, I'm not.
No, I'm not either, right? I'm not. My work is. I'm not. But they also don't seem to have any kind of responsibility to you. So it's interesting. Like, we as people agree that I have a level of responsibility here. And the big tech is like, yeah, but it's not to you. You're not really the customer.
Exactly. And even when it comes to Android, I want to make that point here. Android is open source, as you said. It is even free software when it comes to the software that is published by Google. But what gets installed on our phones is not free software anymore.
Yeah.
That freedom has been taken away in the path to our hands. So I mean, that's why I don't have a phone. It's unfathomable to me to carry a tracking device that is not under my control.
Yeah. No, and it's a sobering reality we come to, which I was going to, literally this goes perfectly with the next question I was going to ask you then, is seeing the expanse of this kind of thing, right? Like, you as a free software advocate, how do you keep going? Like, it just seems to be getting worse, especially 2005. Like, I think Facebook was, I'm trying to think, when was Facebook? Facebook was just about to come out, right? MySpace was out. These are platforms that, again, are built on open source code. Facebook, actually, I always love when people are like, but Microsoft and Facebook and Google, they're the biggest contributors to open source. It's like, yes, they are. Yeah, and it is not free software, right? So how?
Okay, so it is actually free software.
But
the problem there is that, I mean, they contribute they form communities around and they publish the software as free software. Mm-hmm. It is free software. The problem to me is that it's not free software that we can use. It is built for the kinds of scales and use cases that are only for big tech to use. They don't serve us, yeah, not only the deployments that they have that, I mean, are meant to serve themselves, but I mean, I wouldn't run this kind of cluster at home, right? It's no use for me. I do have a Ceph cluster at home. That's a storage system that is replicated. It's very cool. But even that was pushing it. It's not mean for real people. It's meant for corporations, and that's okay. I mean, as far as freedom is concerned, everyone is entitled to pursue their own interests. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing. It's fine. It's fine, and it's great that they're doing that, collaboratively developing free software. Unfortunately, we don't benefit from that. That's unfortunate. Yeah. This is not something that they're doing wrong. They're doing many other things wrong, but this one is okay. It's fine.
So, right. But the issue then comes down to, like, yes, they're giving the code back, but the platform itself, I guess, then is not, like, you're, again, like you said, you're not going to run a Facebook version at home, or even the tools really that they have, right? Netflix has given out a lot of free software tools too. Google, like Kubernetes, you know, Docker, container management, things like that. You can use them at home. It's not really feasible. And I guess that's better than the alternative of proprietary. I'm looking at it more of like the advent of these, we are free in code, but not free at like the platform level, I guess, then.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I didn't mean
to interrupt. No. You're perfect. Go ahead.
Exactly. We get back to the point that I was making about the distinction between software that is free for the service provider and software that is free for the user. So a lot of the deployments that we see involving free software by big tech is something in which the freedom benefits the service provider, whereas the remote user who's being used, so to speak, by the corporations is actually being exploited through the free software.
Right.
Because it's not free software for the end user.
Right.
So that's one of the big problems that I see today in the industry that capture that notion of open source, and I can see that it twisted it because open source never even tried to address this problem. But it is the core problem that free software stands for, that user control over their digital lives, over the computing that is done on their behalf. So it boils down to that. And that brings us to the problem of the mobile devices that you wanted to ask about. So we have platforms now that it's a duopoly that's a very strong concentration of power, and both systems contain a lot of free software, but that freedom does not reach the users. So it's a kind of similar situation in which there is freedom for some, but not freedom for us.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, this duopoly has created a situation in which a lot of software is developed to run on these two platforms.
Yep.
And it is proprietary software.
Yep.
Because both platforms mandate that. There's no room for software freedom in their app stores.
So what do you think of something, and this is from the chat as well, which I was thinking of it as well. I run Calyx OS on mine, but someone said, you know, what about Graphene OS, Lineage OS, and then obviously there's, F-Droid? Is that the open store?
F-Droid is an app store, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. So my knowledge on this front is lacking.
Yeah, you don't even have a phone, right? So yeah, probably yeah. Not the best person to ask, but... thoughts and opinions.
But what I hear is that, I mean, even those that are more, let's put it as Google free, do not achieve software freedom. They're still using Linux underneath, and Linux is unfortunately not free software. I mean, Linux contains pieces of programs, separate programs that are added in the source code that do not respect users' freedom and their license under very obnoxious licenses. There are not a lot of those. There are a lot of others that Linux drivers require to run. Are pieces of software that have been moved out of the source tree. They didn't belong there. But there are still proprietary programs under obnoxious licenses. And many devices require those programs to run. It's typically the operating systems of those peripheral devices that are part of your computer or they're plugged into your computer. And since pretty much nobody who publishes these variants of Android care about this kind of freedom, or maybe they do care, but they think it's hopeless because what use is a device that won't run at all? They end up including those pieces of non-free software, and that problem has been growing steadily over the past 20 years.
Right, it's like the 20 it's the
years
difference.
Ago. Sorry, 30 years ago. 30 years ago, we could actually install Linux and GNU on a computer, and that would be a free software operating system that would make the computer do whatever you, the user, liked it to do.
Mm-hmm.
Since 1996, this has no longer been the case because devices have started requiring those small programs, and they have grown, and so what we have now is most computing devices are mobile. They're not phones anymore, right?
But they are not phones.
Ultra portable computers.
It is. This has more power than what it took to put the astronauts on the moon. This is not a phone. Who calls anyone on this? I just talked to someone today. I never call anybody on it. It's not a phone. You're right. It's a pocket computer.
Yeah, I like better to call them tracking devices, because that's what they are, right?
Yeah,
they're not on your ankle, but they're like 1984 telescreens.
Yeah.
Except we voluntarily carried them around.
We paid for them.
Worse than 1984 telescreens.
So, like, when you saw, like, social media becoming a thing and live streaming becoming a thing, and you're aware of all of the free software and open source code that these are built on, what were your thoughts? Were you just like, I'm just going to focus on what I can change and what I can do? Or did, has it been a difficult journey?
So I remember being introduced to Twitter back in, I think it was 2007. That it was a new thing then.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the point. I was, what is that for? Right? it didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
I think it was 2009 when Identica came up, and I joined, and I understood what that was about. It's good to be in touch with people. It's nice to to be part of an interactive instant messaging community that shares stuff that is from outside our bubbles, and so getting to know things is cool. But we have to realize that although these feelings are great, having them exploited is not great. And the big techs that, tax is an interesting word, is taxing our freedom. The big tech companies that are drive to be social are not our friends, just like the tracking devices that we carry are not our friends. So we got to be wary and pay attention to where we invest our time, our attention, our friendships. Because there's a lot of pressure in network pressure. And it's great that we have something like the Fediverse that enables people to get those great feelings without giving up the other important things that make us human.
Yeah. No, I really think the Fediverse is the way. I've been talking to people about, like, feel free to use YouTube and Twitch if you want, especially for, you know, if you're just looking around and finding people. But don't forget, you can have, you know, your local community center and also have the big sports complex down the road, right? They can coexist. And that's where I've been seeing these kinds of things. Like, yes, this, you know, my stuff goes up on YouTube. If you don't want it to, that's fine. But like, that is not its home. That is a way to, it is an outreach platform as far as I'm concerned, something like that.
And that's fine, but let me share some advice. There are ways to watch YouTube videos without using YouTube proprietary programs on your browser.
FreeTube is excellent.
Yeah, I haven't used that one. I use YouTube Download or YTDLP, I think.
Yep.
That's its name. It runs underneath of a media player like MPV or VLC, and it can download and save or download and watch immediately the videos from YouTube that you that people will share.
Yep.
There is also a platform that works on your browser. And the name escapes me now. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And so, it's a it's a cat and mouse game where, you know, they change something and then they're like, haha, they'll never figure it out. It's like, it's built on standard web technologies. Unless you lock it down, we can always figure it out.
Yeah, and they are trying to lock it down. That's constantly. The thing. It's a sort of a DRM that they're implementing.
Yeah.
It will probably eventually get to that point.
Yeah.
Which is scary. I mean, I don't like the notion that we have so much of our culture captured in a website that is trying very hard to stop people from doing things with the videos that are stored there.
Yeah.
If they actually succeed in locking that up, that will be a very major loss.
I mean, if they do that, they're going to break the web. Because how many websites do you go to now where it's like, here's an instructions. Also, here's my YouTube video on how to do it. Like that literally breaks.
I'd say that the web is already broke.
yeah.
Most of the websites that I visit will show me nothing except please enable JavaScript to view the site.
Yep.
So it has come to a point in which I've published an article and almost implemented on my website something that does the opposite. Like when you visit that with JavaScript enabled, it will tell you to disable it, otherwise it won't see anything. I thought that's hilarious, but I think it would be too annoying.
Yeah. It's every page.
It's just the way that I feel on most of the web these days. It sucks. I helped build these things, and now I'm digitally excluded because of these choices.
Yeah.
It feels very unfair and frustrating.
Well,
but there we are. I mean, I'm kicked out of websites. I'm kicked out of because I don't have a mobile phone, then I don't.
Yeah, that's going to a restaurant. I've had it before where they're like, just scan this QR code, and I'm just like, first off, that's a horrible idea. Secondly, no, I'm not doing it. Can I have a menu? I feel so old when I ask people for a stinking menu. But yeah, it's becoming more and more prevalent. It just
it's the sort of thing that. I mean, I can understand the economics behind these moves, but I wish more people will realize that it's not in their own benefit. It's
right.
I mean, what if you run out of battery? What if your phone is stolen?
People put their driver's licenses and insurance and credit cards on these things, and I'm like, drop it the wrong way and it's gone.
And then how do you get another? You can even it's crazy. I think at some point someone will realize that I can't get into the game unless I'm already in the game. And then
you don't want in this game anyway. Don't worry, Alex.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I really don't. But there are things that I would like to be able to do. So I started the Zero G project. I'm not sure I told you about that before.
No. Wait. Go ahead.
Zero G is about reconceiving the notion of ultra portable computing device for communications. So we need something that preserves privacy and respects freedom. So it's not only a matter of having a free software layer that runs from the operating system up, and that enables you to look up Wikipedia or to get directions on maps and things like that. But we also need a hardware that respects our freedom, and we need a network that respects our freedom. And privacy. That means we should build something using a layered network like Tor. And because What I realized is that as long as we have a phone network that is based on surveillance to know where you are, for messages to get to you, for calls to reach you,
literally how it works, yeah.
We cannot escape surveillance. So yep. With Tor, you can listen for calls on a Tor-onion service. So just like the Pirate Bay, nobody knows where that is hosted. You can get onto a mesh network, and then you can announce, here's where I'm taking calls, and that's not where you are. The calls will be forwarded to you. The messages will be forwarded to you.
Interesting.
This three-layered approach, I think, would solve a lot of problems. But what it would not solve is the problem that we have today of applications made only for those two operating systems, mm-hmm. and applications that are proprietary.
Oh,
that's where I got stuck, and I'm
hopeful with companies like Valve, while they, you know, their primary motivation is money through selling games, which are proprietary. They've built out so many amazing pieces of technology that allow us to take that kind of control back. And I know if you've heard of FEX, F-E-X, translates x86 code into ARM, and they're looking to use it for like an Android layer as well. So that, yeah, it sounds pretty cool. But
yeah, the thing is, I mean, their focus is on games. And games need GPUs, and the state of GPUs is horrible, horrible, horrible freedom-wise. There's no way to get a current GPU. That's the video thing that does all the 3D processing and stuff. And lately also LLMs and machine learning and things like that. So there's no way to get a modern GPU that respects your freedom. I think that's a key project that we need to address. But even when it comes to it doesn't run on Linux Libre. That's what I was going to say. But also, I wanted to highlight the project that the FSF, the original Free Software Foundation, is running. To reverse engineer pieces of Android that are currently required for it to for a device to run, and make those free software. That may be a basis for a freedom respecting mobile device. I think it's a very important project to try to regain some of the freedom that we have been losing.
Absolutely.
That will be the basis for change in the application landscape.
Yeah.
Because as long as the base is proprietary, the things on top are pretty much hopeless.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that happy note, now, I mean, it is good. I want that to happen. I wonder at this point, though, whether it takes these companies to shitify themselves so much that people finally start paying attention, or whether they move on to the next shiny thing. They're like, yeah, we're done with this one. Go ahead and play with it. Because it seems like it's going to be one of the two. But now for the real reason I asked Alex here, is to give him the opportunity to win a prize of a lifetime. Our prize today is a less in shitified software stack. Are you ready for the quiz, Alex?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Let's go for that.
All right. Favorite movie, and why is it Spaceballs?
Actually, you know, I'm neurodivergent, right? I'm autistic. I can't lie.
This is fine. Yeah. What's your favorite movie? I love Spaceballs. I love it. I'm so excited for two. But what's your favorite movie?
Gee, there are so many that I really, really like. I don't think I can pick one. I could talk about my favorite book. That's 1984.
Okay. Oh, I can't read it. It's too scary. It's become too realistic. I can't read it.
Yeah, make oral fiction again, right? It's right. It sucks. We're living something that is worse. It's a chimera combining 1984 and Brave New World and other.
I read Brave New World.
Green and things. It's. I mean, we live in interesting times. That had never been such a curse before.
I want to live in boring times. When do boring times come? Can I have another go around where it's just boring? That's what I want.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. And I have a feeling I know the answer to this one, but I have to ask. Freedom or enshittification?
Oh, that's not a hard choice. That's the title of one of my most recent speech, by the way.
Yep. No, I know. I saw a software enshittification or freedom, and I'm like, that's it. Yeah, but I want to switch it up a bit.
I mean, it's freedom, of course.
Right?
Freedom is the antidote to enshittification. It's the vaccine. It prevents, as long as you have control of the system, there's no way for someone else to use their control to enshittify it, because you have control. So that's key. That would have avoided so many problems that we have now, and it will avoid so many other problems in the future. Yeah. If only we hold on to our freedom and defend that.
All right. Next question is north, west, east, or south?
I guess south, because I live in the southern hemisphere. Right. Only because I have to pick one.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's perfect. Love it. All right. Next question is, what does an alternate universe Alex do?
I guess he's happy in the other universe where freedom is more prevalent and
you seem pretty happy.
Oh, I'm broken that way. I'm happy for life. I'm happy even through tough times, but I'm not happy about a lot of things that are going on. I'm not happy that that I have a harder and harder time to communicate with others because they are going for closed gardens, walled gardens that. Do not welcome me to communicate with them without also embracing without being exploited, without giving up my freedom. I don't enjoy, I'm not happy that the government imposes so much non-free software on us. I'm not happy that companies take our carrying a phone for granted. And impose their proprietary apps on us. That's, I mean, there's a lot to be unhappy about, but somehow, I mean, I've escaped into a corner of freedom. It's shrinking every day.
I mean,
I worry a lot about that, but
I've talked to a lot of people that are pretty sick and tired of big tech. So a lot of people seem very positive about an idea of having a completely open social network that is theirs. So we might be seeing a pivot point, and if not, I'm going to keep trying, and I know you're going to keep trying, and I thank you for that.
Yeah, that's the thing that I have to realize. Most of us, nearly all of us, want something different from the enshito scene, as Corey puts it. We want to have control of our lives. We want to be able to do things without being exploited, without being distracted by impositions from others without conditioning our behaviors to whatever promotes the business interests of third parties. If we make sense of that and we start acting, we start behaving, we start making decisions together, that's how we change things. That's how there's a mosquito here distracting me. That's how we get to make the world a better place for us all.
Yep.
And so
hey,
we got to do that.
I mean, open source, people said open source would never work. It was a cancer and now it's everywhere. It's been twisted, as you said, but we're teaching an entire generation of people like this is the only way. And that's one step. It's not the end goal that we wanted, but it's at least a step. Right.
So. Oh yeah, certainly. It's not a bad step, isn't it? It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a step in the right direction. That's the thing. We won't change the world in a day.
Yep.
We won't take a single step and fix it all. This is not a Hollywood movie. This is real life.
Yep.
So we have to like work hard every day to get to where we want to be.
All right.
And we get to collaborate with others, and there is this dynamics of we want different things, but we can find common ground and fight for that, and there's a lot of common ground that goes in the direction of restoring control over our digital lives.
Yep. Next question, and this is I feel like I'm opening a hornet's nest here, so. The next question is GPL, BSD, or MIT?
So all of them are fine free software licenses. They respect the user's freedoms. They enable users to have control over their own lives in as much as they get the software with the permissions that these licenses grant. Strategically, it makes a lot more sense to me to go the GPL way, because the GPL, besides respecting the freedoms, and we didn't say what freedoms those were, so let me take this opportunity.
Yeah.
So in order to control your digital life.
I'm sorry, I have to go grab my kids. I will be right back. You continue, though. I will be able to hear you.
All right. So in order to have control of your digital life, you need four freedoms. You have to be able to run the software for any purpose. You have to be able to study the source code so as to know what it does and adapt it so that it does what you want. You must be able to distribute the program to help others, and you must be able to and make copies, and you must be able to improve the program and distribute it to your improvements to others. If any of these four freedoms is missing, then you don't control the program that you use to do your computing. Someone else does. Even if you can't program, even if you don't know how to write a program or how to read a program, you need those four freedoms in order to ask for help from someone else. You need to be able to make a copy of the program that you got and give it to the other party that is going to help you. Then this other party can study the source code and modify and adapt the program so that it does what you wish, and then they can distribute the improved version back to you, and then you can run it for any purpose. Those are the four freedoms. Those are what enable you to have control over your digital life. So the three licenses that you mentioned, the MIT/X11 license, the BSD licenses, and the GPL respect these freedoms. But the GPL has a twist. It uses a trick or a technique called copyleft. It grants you the freedoms, but it states that If you choose to distribute the program, then you have to do it under the same license.
Yeah.
Then you have to respect the other's freedoms too, so that the freedoms become inseparable from the program. This is why free software people mostly prefer copyleft, because it ensures freedoms for all, not just they don't allow someone to distribute the program while taking the freedom away, like
that's
in Android, for instance.
And
so I prefer GPL.
I worked at Red Hat, and I know that you worked for Red Hat.
You too.
I actually was there when you were there. We didn't know each other, obviously. One of the things that I always found interesting was, and I didn't tell my wife either that I picked up the dog. Sorry. This has been a mess. It's been a day. But one of the people I talked to, I was like, I am for the GPL, and I'm not a software developer, so honestly, it doesn't really matter. But one of the things they said to me is like, but yeah, the GPL is like a cancer. It spreads itself everywhere. And I'm just like, then don't use the stuff that's GPL. Like, you have that decision to make. If you don't like it, don't use it.
I object to this framing that some have done, of calling it a cancer. It's, I mean, comparing freedom to a cancer is not reasonable. Some have compared it to a virus, and like saying that it jumps from one program to another, and that's just not true. If you use a piece of software that is under the GPL, then you inherit the freedom, and that inheritance goes on to any other programs derived from that. But it doesn't jump from one program to another like a virus.
It's the idea.
It doesn't metastasize like a cancer.
The idea that people are like, well, but I can't use it and then build my stuff on it because I don't want to give my stuff away for free. And it's like, then don't.
Well, yes, you can. Yes, you can. If it's your choice whether to distribute the program or not.
Yeah. No, that's.
If you do distribute it, then you should respect others' freedoms.
Right.
That's ethics. That's a moral principle. If you want to be respected, then you have to respect others. If you want to enjoy the freedoms that you get, then you should be prepared to respect others too. But that doesn't mean that you have to give the program to the others. You can keep it to yourself. And when people say, oh, but business requires me to deprive my customers of freedom, that's nonsense. Most of the software developed in the world is free software.
Yeah.
And I'm not speaking of software that is published as open source. I'm speaking of software that is developed specifically for a single customer that hires that development. And that single customer gets the source code and gets all the freedoms that should come with any piece of software. That's how most of the software that is developed in the world works. Yeah. And so there's a lot more free software that's called the deep free software web that people just don't know about, because what they hear about is the non-free software that is distributed in their model that is hostile to the users.
There is more free software that you will never hear about than there is proprietary software that you know about. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Totally get you.
It's kind of perception bias.
Yeah. No, absolutely. All right. Excellent answer. I love that answer. Sorry, I had to get my kids off the bus.
Sure.
As usual, the last question will be sent to Alex telepathically. I'll send it to you. Yeah. Everyone always loves this one. I'll send you the question, take your time, and then give me your answer. All right? You ready?
Okay.
Here it comes. Open up your telepathic lines. Okay. There's your question.
I'm getting so many questions. So many questions.
I think chat was sending you all their questions too.
So, yeah. So what what kind of world would I like to live in? Yeah, we touched on that a bit, I think. But here's the thing. I don't think that world will come about just because, you know. Yep. we have to build that. So I would like a world in which computers obey us again. I would like a world in which we can have the joy of writing programs and sharing the knowledge about software without being threatened by by copyright laws, by patent laws, by exploitative business models, by uncertification, by yep. things like that. I would like a world in which we could, we need not carry tracking devices, and which we can interact with others without sacrificing things that are important to us. And I know that this is not just going to come about. I know that we'll have to fight very hard for that. Mm-hmm. And so what I would like is a world in which we get together and fight instead of just letting our commons be swallowed by proprietary interests. I'd like us to build this free cyberspace where we can live in freedom.
Excellent. Wow. Excellent answer. I love that. Okay. Well, congratulations. You got every answer, either correct or incorrect. Good job. Unfortunately, we went to purchase you the less Inshitified software and found out that it costs a monthly fee in order to use. So unfortunately, you'll just have to stick with free and open source software for now.
Well, I'm happy with that.
But thank you, Alex, so much for joining me. This has been massively entertaining. Thanks. And incredibly interesting. And thank you. Thank you so much for all you do. And I wholly agree. We all try and do what we can, take one step at a time. I'm very much aware this might not come in my lifetime at this point, but I'm going to keep building the blocks that I can so that the next generation might get there. Right? So.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's it.
Well, thank you. It has been fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. That's all we have for Fireside Fetty today. Thank you all so much. Keep doing what you're doing out there. You guys matter. The reason the Fediverse exists is because of the folks that are on it. There's no corporate backing. There's no advertisements. It's only for us. And we're going to all keep trying to figure out how to keep pushing it for as much as we can. And until next episode, we'll catch you later. Have a great one.